Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Juliana and Luke is just, he can't talk, so much is he laughing. And we are going to review a book today. Luke, what is it?
This is a great introduction. Juliana says I'm not allowed to talk more than her, so I told her to do the introduction. The book is a military science fiction book, kind of, by Elizabeth
kind
Moon.
Of.
Yeah, you talk about it.
All right, so it is called... Wait, what is it called?
It's called Trading in Danger.
Right. Trading in Danger, Elizabeth Moon.
Vata's War, book number one.
Exactly. That's
it. Why are we reading this?
We're reading this because some people on Goodreads recommended a book of Elizabeth Moon. And I was, after finishing Ancillary Justice, I was on my way to look out for a new book to read. So I remembered, oh, somebody mentioned Elizabeth Moon because the name is so nice. I remembered the name. So I went on, I went on Kindle or iTunes,
yeah, because,
iBooks or something.
Because we share our iTunes
sharing,
and we share Amazon.
Exactly,
and stuff
like
that,
so that we both can read the books that the other person bought. And so I had to look for stuff and I downloaded a sample of this one, Trading in Danger, and I downloaded a sample of, what was the other one? Hunting Party.
I don't know that one.
So that was, in the first place, the book that people recommended to me. And for some reasons, I don't even remember why, I bought Trading in Danger after reading the sample and not Hunting Party. So I decided I'd read that one first. Don't ask why. It was a purely just intuitionally decision.
Now, this is normally the point where Juliana says, and when Luke was reading the book, he was just moaning and complaining all the way through. And now this has flipped around and you started reading this book and you were just like, it's so repetitive. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, right. So I started reading that book and I thought, wait, what is this? Why is... Oh, no. And this was kind of like what I was thinking when I read the beginning of the book and then I told you about it. And for some reason you decided you were going to read it as well.
Well, and, because it was already there when I was shared purchases on Amazon. I was just like, oh, send to iPad. But also, I wanted to read it because you were saying, oh, it's really bad. And I'm like, but you're only 20% of the way in, just stop. And she's like, oh, I bought it. But then you got about halfway through and you're like, oh, it's actually interesting now. And so I was like, oh, it's interesting. So
yeah. So I actually got hooked up quite a bit in, from
hooked
like... Hooked into it. I don't know why.
It put its claws into you.
But the thing is, afterwards, when I finished it, I was thinking like, well, this is the kind of book that totally gets to my basic, oh, I just like to read stuff just because it's easy to read.
Yeah.
Brain. It did absolutely nothing for my intellectual brain. It interrupted my intellectual reading so often that it was actually quite disappointing. But then for some reason I just was...
Like satisfying as well.
Yeah. And I just read it and I think I read it in two, like the main part in 2 days or something.
Yeah.
But also it really serves my style of reading, which is really, I start in the left, like kind of, it goes over from the left corner to the bottom right corner. So it is more like a...
Yeah, you say this about how you read a book and I can't do that. Like I either have to read every single word, every single line, every single bit, you know, every single little bit of punctuation. Yeah. Or I've got to make a conscious decision. I am skipping this page
exactly
until I get
to
the next
page. I don't
need
to do that because in the way I read, I told that before, I'm sure. The way I read, I don't read in words and sentences. I read in scenes. So in my brain, there's a story as a movie going on and I don't need every word. I don't need every single thing that happens. So I can just read across the page and just get the important things.
You just get the general sense of the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And no matter how often things get repeated, I notice that and my brain says, holy shit, again. But the movie that's happening in my brain just continue on.
It's just like background.
It's just, yeah, okay, yeah. It mentioned this again.
You can't do this with every book, but a book like
this. I can't
do it. Yeah.
Exactly. Now I'm reading currently H.G. Wells.
Yeah.
as a total, like the total opposite of that. I can't do that there at all, because there I have to actually read every word.
It was so funny when you actually said, oh, I started reading this book, and just the first sentence you were like, that's a real sentence.
Yes. And so this was just serving my movie book brain, I guess. So this is why I had fun with it. But on the other side, it is also so depressing. So depressing.
Depressing how?
Well,
like how bad it is.
How basic the writing is, how unbelievably repetitive it is. You as the reader, you experience with the main character, you experience a scene, you experience something that happens to her. And then all through the book, you get like three different points where she tells the same thing that just happened to her that you experienced as the reader to someone else, in her words. And you think, oh, okay, yeah, we had this. We had this. We know what happened. She can just... I think that the problem is maybe that the author didn't manage to just crop down on things and say, oh, and then they went to a dinner and she told the whole story. This could just be it. Instead, she just let the person, the character, tell the whole story.
That we've just heard. That we just read.
That we experienced. We didn't only hear it. We experienced it with her.
Now, this could be, in a way, every time I was reading this, I was like, oh, is it going to be clever? We see this very much through the eyes of one character.
Yes.
Kai Vatter.
Kailara
Ermintrude Vatter. She said her full name at one point. I can't remember what it was. And I kept on thinking, oh, this is going to be clever because she's set up to be this perfect person. And I thought, it'd be really cool that she's going to retell the story, but it's going to be different this time.
Yeah.
This time she tells it, it's going to be different. And we're going to realize actually she's lying to herself or lying to someone else.
Yeah.
And at one point I was like, oh, this is definitely what's going to happen. This is why we keep reading these stories repeatedly. Because then she gets hit on the head and her brain, there's an implant or something.
Yes, the implant.
And that gets deleted and taken out. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be the point now. She's not going to remember it fully. And she's going to say one thing that happens, then later on in the book, we're going to meet up with the people who are on the other side. Mm.
And then see the truth.
And it's going to see the truth. Guess what?
This book is not that clever.
It's not that clever.
It has not really depth. It has no depth. It is very shallow. It is very much like you expect it to be. There are no real surprises for the reader who actually wants to go and think, this could happen at that point, and this could happen at this point. And no, it doesn't.
We're always told way in advance what's going to happen.
What's going to happen.
And then it happens. And then we get told it two or three more times.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back a bit. You were saying... Oh, my other thing of Elizabeth Moon, I've only read one other book by Elizabeth Moon that I can remember, or at least in the SFBRP.
Do you know which one it was?
Yes, it was called Speed of Dark.
Okay.
And it's about a guy with kind of like autism... kind of some kind of spectrum, Asperger's kind of whatever the spectrum is.
Yes.
When they say spectrums, someone there who is like this kind of person. It's about his life told from his point of view, and it's quite interesting because apparently Elizabeth Moon's son has also got some kind of Asperger's kind of thing. So it seems like a very personal book, and it's about someone who could get treatment, and it's like, should he get the treatment? So it's kind of like, you know, like when you're thinking about Flowers for Algernon.
Mm.
It's a bit like that. Not as good as that, but kind of like in that ballpark where someone who has got like a different mental model is trying to communicate and interact with the world.
The moral, why should he do that? What would that bring for him?
Yeah, would he still be the same person?
Or would it just be for society to be easier with him?
Mm.
But it doesn't actually improve his personal life.
Well, that's the thing. That's the whole question of the book. And I don't want to give too much away. I really enjoyed that book.
Sounds good, yeah.
I even wrote a song about it because I was doing a songwriting project at the time.
Oh, what was it?
It's called Speed of Dark. It's on my 2-minute pop album.
All right.
You'd recognize it if I played it to you.
Yeah.
And I put it at the end of that. So I had good things, but I did know that she did this kind of military science fiction stuff. And then when you said, oh, just read the book. And of course, I didn't search for it when I looked at it.
Yeah.
I just went onto Amazon family sharing or account sharing. Put it on your purchases, purchased by other people or whatever it is.
And you just put it on your iPad.
And I just sent an iPad and started reading. And then when I actually looked at the front cover, I was like, oh, fuck. Because the front cover
tells quite a story.
Let me turn off this. Well, let's just go on here as well. Front cover is cover. Oh no! It wasn't that cover. It was on the Amazon
in the library
page.
When you go to library, you can see it there.
Okay. Oh yeah, that was it. So it came in, and it is a woman in a young woman with kind of like not tightly cropped hair, but kind of like fixed down hair, not flowing hair, like military female hairstyle in a military outfit with buttons down the front.
Yep.
Standing in front of a command console with a picture of space behind.
Yes.
Now, if you've ever looked at any of these, it says on Wikipedia, they have been characterized as military science fiction, similar in style to the works of Lewis McMaster Bejold, Vorkosigan Saga, David Weber, and, you know, some others as well. And so if you just know David Weber and his Honor Harrington, it's like someone went, oh, Honor Harrington's selling pretty well. And just like got the same cover artist and the same, you know, it's one of those.
And tell you what, Hunting Party looks just alike.
Yeah, well, slightly different,
more colourful.
It's more colourful, but you see this, which is a very now. Oh, I accidentally hit it, but it's a very. When you go back to the library, there, it's a no, not the front cover. Yeah, the front cover is different from the one that comes up in the Kindle app library. My point being is that it's a very naval military kind
yes,
of thing.
It really
and,
is.
And that's all that military science fiction is. It's like, okay, we want sea battles, but let's have them in space.
Yeah.
We want trading happening, but let's have it in space. We want pirates, but let's have it in space. You know, and that's all these different kind of things. It's just the whole world is always set up to do that kind of thing. I think in the Honor Harrington books, it's more like, oh, there's gateways, so they're going through gateways and coming out. It's here, it's sort of like, oh, they can go into faster than light, they can go into warp drive whenever and things.
Yes, that's true.
I want you to talk a little bit about the setup and tell me what you, because you got to do more talking than me in this episode. You tell me what this book was like what you told me at the start, which made me want to read it. Go and tell me that one.
What did I tell you? I can't remember. What did I tell you?
Well, you said about the. You said, "Oh, she gets kicked out for this reason." Just tell me what like the setup.
She is at the military academy of her planet.
Yeah,
and she gets kicked out because of a reason that feels so made up. That reason feels so made up, so that she can actually go on the journey of the story. So. To actually tell the story, Elizabeth Moon had to come up with an idea why she gets kicked out of the academy, and it feels very much staged to me. And I don't know what I told you why you should read that book.
You said she got kicked out for being too nice to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it says in the book. Well, I actually didn't quite understand why they chose to kick her out because she trusted someone and made it possible that something happened to the academy.
She went against exact regulations or something, yeah.
Well, she did something human.
Yeah, but later we find out that she was the top of the class, like her and Hal
exactly. And then you think, oh, maybe they would maybe fight a bit more to keep her at the academy. Maybe say, okay, you get to do some more extra shifts or whatever, do more duty, or you're suspended or whatever. But if you kick out one of the best in your class in the academy, there must be something really wrong with the academy or the people running the academy or the professors or however you call those commanders or generals. I don't know.
A staff captain.
It feels very suspicious. And there might be reasons later in the series that are mentioned.
There isn't. It's just bad writing.
And anyway, I thought, okay, so we had to have a reason why she get kicked out of the academy. But so she still had the military background, but not quite as a finished officer or whatever. So she knows a bit military behavior. But then also she had to go on to do her actual adventure. As surprise, the daughter of the CFO, CEO,
like the guy who's let me put it this way, her family, her name Varta, is the name of the Varta Shipping Company.
Yes.
So in other words, one of the best known shipping companies. I say shipping. Shipping, I guess. Space shipping companies.
And this is where it feels so much like Vorkosigan, because it all comes down. The whole story is based on her being the daughter of someone who is already really successful.
Yeah.
So
it's actually, it almost makes me angry about the logical position that I'm just meant to be putting myself into somebody. And yes. I told this about Vorkosa Gonzaga, that he just happens to be, like, he's amazing and does all this amazing stuff, but he also just happens to be the son of the prime minister of one of the most powerful planets.
Exactly. And Barrier. Even though he is quite of a prick, Vata Kailara is just really young and just a bit.
But the only reason she can do on this is that, like you said, the only thing is because it's so much privilege.
Exactly.
It's like just, she was like, oh, what I'm going to, and you said to me, oh, she has to take, this is what you actually said to me. She goes, she has a spaceship and she has to be taking it to be scrapped. But instead of taking it to be scrapped, she decides to take on some extra work and see if she can do it up so it doesn't have to be scrapped and then she'll own her own starship. Yes. And you know what? That's the thing. I was like, oh, that's actually quite an interesting thing.
It does sound interesting. Yeah.
But the reason she has enough money to take on this extra stow is just because she's the daughter of the person who owns the whole fleet.
Yeah.
And once you discover that, it's like, that isn't interesting to me anymore. I thought it would be like, she's going to do something really clever along the way, and she's just going to she's going to do something, and it's going to be like, she could be lucky, but she's going to have to do something to be able to have the money to do on this extra thing to be able to buy the ship back from the company and take it of her own.
Right.
No, she doesn't. She's the one, she's already the captain. She's just given a ship. She's the captain of the ship. The only reason she can do this is because she's the captain of the ship. I didn't realize she was going to be the captain of the ship when you told me that, you know. Yeah. I thought she was just going to be someone on the ship and they were like, and it's going to be scrapped. Oh, we got to abandon the ship. And she's like, oh, well, we know the salvaging rights. You know, it's like now, if you find a ship that's been abandoned at sea and
you can just take it.
Yes. And the salvaging, I don't know, you know, there's this thing called flotsam and jetsam. There's these different words. If something's found at sea and it's floating, you can just pick it up out the sea and it belongs to you.
All right.
But if there's different regulations. And I thought it'd be a fun, clever way of doing regulations and getting around it. Oh, and if I take this thing here, I'm going to do this. I'm going to promise them that I'm going to come back. So I'm going to find some money. I'm going to scrape it together. I'm going to defer.
There is a lot of potential in that story.
Yeah.
The problem with it is that is actually really just about her proving that she can manage to do stuff, which everyone knew in advance that she would do, she does.
Yeah, okay. Let me talk a bit more here. So this is the thing. Juliana told me that's what the book was going to be about. And I was like, oh, that's going to be interesting.
Sorry.
No, it's good. Because I thought it's like an anti-spoiler that I thought, oh, at some point, and it's going to be interesting to read how she's going to how she's going to realize, you know what? I could keep this. Like, when the situation comes up and she's going to be like, I could take this ship for myself, even though at that point I knew she was the daughter of the CEO or the chairman of the board or whatever it is, like, and she was only getting it by pure nepotism kind of things like that. So, like, everything that I hate about, you know, about moneyed privilege and people, like, everyone else on the ship was, oh, they'll die, they'll just do, she'll just do whatever she wants because she's like, well, I'm the daughter of this, of course I'm going to be. Anyway, all of that, put that aside, I thought it'd be interesting to let her come to the realization, oh, what I could do, even though this is my first time being on a captain on a ship, I could own this ship by the end of this run.
Yes. Be independent from the family.
She starts thinking that as soon as she's told about this, she's like, I wonder if I should. Oh no, I should put this out of my mind. And then she meets someone like a pilot, and he says, hey, you know what you should do, even if it's your first time? You should try and look for some opportunities to make some money and then buy this ship so it doesn't have to be scrapped, and then you've got your own ship. And I was like, wait, that, I thought that's what this story was going to be about, and I thought that was going to be her decision to do that. But other people just said that, and then
other
later
people
on,
giving, yeah.
And then when she does it, it's not even like some thing comes up, and she's like, "Oh, should I take this?" It's like the first thing, the first opportunity she has to make any money, she's like, "And this will be what I do." And I was like, "There's not even going to be like, oh, should I take this money? No, you know what? I won't. I'll just carry on going. Oh, should I take this? Oh, I will. Oh, and it goes wrong. But and then the next time it's like, oh, this is the way that I'm going. Yeah. It wasn't. It was just the first thing that comes along. And then the people on the ship were making bets when she would do this and go off. And then back at home, the people back at home, like her father and an uncle or whatever it is, and the other people were like going, oh yeah, we knew she was going to do this. It was just a matter of when. So what I thought was going to be the main interesting thing about the story that you told me Everybody in the story knew it was going to happen before it got there, including the person who decided to do it, the people that she talked to about it, everyone on the ship that she was talking, like, was with. They were making bets on when it would happen, and her father and her uncle and these other people back home. They all knew that this was what the story was going to be, and then it just happens. And so it's totally unsatisfying when it actually happened, because I'm just like, yeah, but you've just been telling us this is going to happen, like, since the beginning. Well, not since the beginning of the book, but since she was fired from the thing. It was just...
And I'm very sorry that I obviously made you think in the wrong direction about it.
I thought it was going to be better than it was.
The thing is, while you're just mentioning this, actually, this happens over the whole book, that she's getting into a situation and then she talks to somebody who's kind of either actually saying what she has to do, or like in a thinking, saying like, in this situation, what you could do is this and this and this and this. And then she says, oh, and then I'm going to do this. So it's always like this indirect, like other people indirectly always tell her what she should do. And so she later uses that to then do that in the situation or in another situation.
And then afterward, she tells everybody what she's done three times. And then everyone starts telling her how amazing she is and clever she is for doing it, even though she's so young and a woman.
There we come to the other big problem that I had.
Do your rant.
It is like, just because the main character is female doesn't make this book not sexist.
And
this
it's written by a woman as well.
It's written by a woman and it has a female lead character. That does not mean that it is an absolutely, women are actually good in what they do and they can actually just be normal. This feels so like this. In all the female characters in this book, except maybe the engineer officer, Quincy. Maybe not her. She's actually quite capable and actually quite normal. All the other women act like they're just... And either they are too, super annoying, like Auntie Gracie or her Gracie mother, Lane, who only cares about... clothes.
In a way, this is good that she always tells you what's going to happen in advance. She goes, now I've got to go back and I've got to face my mother. I really don't want to face my mother because she's going to be really annoying. And I'm going to have to face Aunt Gracie Lane and I really don't like her. And she's going to have cake for me and I don't need a cake. And these people are going to be really annoying. And my mother's going to be really annoying. And after we were told that about three times each about Gracie and her mother, we got to meet them. And I was just like, and I just said to you know what? I'm skipping these bits. And I did. I just skipped through those parts every time. Yeah. And I was like,
and you meet annoying people.
And it was nice that she told me that those people were going to be annoying, because when I got there I just skipped those passages.
But what I'm saying is that you think, okay, well, she is a privileged young person who just got kicked out of the military academy, and so she has to fight her way and she has to do this kind of stuff. But every time that, I don't know, she just feels so whiny and like...
She does.
She does. Like, and the thing is, then people around her act like they always have to take care of her. They are using her as the this is just a young unexperienced,
untested, captain,
female girl. All of them. Everyone she meets is treating her either in the way of she's just a girl,
or she's just
a female.
And so there's this line here that I made a note of. Why is it, Jerry, that daughters invariably go after something either impractical or unsuited to their character?
Yes.
Like everyone is just talking about her as though she is just an idiot teenager.
Yeah.
And to be honest, she is in some ways, but like, why is this being embraced by everyone? And then, the only, like, it's then everyone comes out, oh no, you are actually capable. You are a woman and young, but it turns out you are actually capable. Well done, you surprised us.
And it gets put on our noses all the time.
Yeah, it's just we're being punched in our faces all the time. Anyway, so I understand. I don't want to get too much into that because it is.
It's a bit annoying.
It is a bit annoying, especially after watching even stuff like, you know, we were talking about this in the Star Wars review and our Christmas specials with Mission Impossible. Like, we talked about that quite a lot. Like, what did Whitman do? But it's amazing that this is the kind of thing written by a female author, but it's so much written for like this, military science fiction fan guy wish fulfillment. It's just weird kind of thing that's the thing And this is obviously a money-making thing for Elizabeth Moon, because I've read another book by her, and it's way better than this. Yeah. This is like, I'm going to do an Anna Harrington series, but it's going to be on trade ships, it's not going to be on warships.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And I was thinking the whole book through, what would happen? How would the whole story change if you would replace Kailara Vatta with a young guy?
Nothing.
Well, I think a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it would just be Miles Vorkosigan, but less witty.
Yes, probably. But the whole idea that humans can be underestimated appears just so much more with females than with males.
And also, what I notice is in all these military science fiction books, the things that people do wrong to be punished is always actually the right thing. They're always too good. And it's like, oh, I did something which was, you did something which helped too many people, and therefore you must be punished. You were too honest in this situation. And so everybody is always punished, so they have something to fight against. Mm. But the reason that they're in that position that they have to fight against it is because they did something too good.
Yeah.
And it's not even like they are part of an evil empire and they get kicked out of an evil empire for doing something too good. No, they're just a military academy and they did something too good.
Yeah.
So even the bad things that they do and are punished for are things which we should be aspiring to. And of course, it's written... you highlighted the exact same thing that I did. Why is it, Jerry, that daughters invariably go after something that is either impractical or unsuited to their
character?
Because
that sentence is just so bullshit.
Yeah, but he does say, Jerry, because Jerry is his father, and so Jerry is like, oh, should I say something back against this? No, I'm not going to get into bringing up daughters now. So there is a little bit of like, oh, should I stand up to this sexist? No, because my daughter is defenseless and useless enough where she shouldn't be, and I need to be controlling her and keeping an eye on her so much that I'm not going to defend her character because I look down on her so much and don't think she's capable enough that I have to, you know, it's sort of like these different layers. Like,
well, the weird thing is, he actually has the father has actually quite a high opinion about her, and I think he gave her that opportunity to be a captain as still very young.
Yes, I understand first that, but she didn't earn it.
No, she didn't earn it, but he actually has quite a high thinking of her.
But she's just basically competent. Everything that she does is just basically competent.
Yes, and that is always the problem with the same, like the Vorkosigan thing, is that...
No, he's generally lucky. Like, he just goes in and just looks out because he's the same character. He's the main character. In this, she's generally unlucky, but she gets through things by being basically competent.
Yes.
Like, she'll look at a contract and go, ah, well, I don't like this thing in the contract. And they're like, oh, you got us. And I was like, no, she just read the contract. Yes. And then something else like, oh, and she did this, but she didn't, like, oh, you got us there. It's like, no, she didn't get you. She just did the right steps.
She just did her homework before. Yeah, I get it. Also, let's come to the one thing that was the thing that got you annoyed over the whole book. He was sitting next to me.
There are many things.
But there's one thing that got you so terribly. Every time you read this word...
Chekhov's fruitcakes cake.
Yes.
Okay.
You were actually all the time ranting about that. Tell the people why.
Okay, if you get the book, and let me do it this way, and I'm going to do a search on this in this book for fruitcake, because Aunt Gracie Lane gives her some fruitcake. And she's like, oh, I really don't like fruitcake. How shall I get rid of
it? How many did she get?
3 fruitcakes.
Right.
Well, the thing is, I actually skipped the part when she got that because, you know, I said I'm going to skip the annoying Gracie Lane. Yep. But then she was like, oh, I really don't like it. It's inedible and I should get rid of it. And I was like, chuck it in the sea. She's on a boat or something. Yep. On an island. Chuck it in the sea. And then she doesn't. So she's like, well, how will I get rid of this? And I'm like...
So what was your thought when she didn't get rid of it?
Well, I thought it was just going to be a joke that she was just going to get rid of it. And I thought, first of all, oh, it's just going to clog up something on the ship. And they're going to say, why did you put the fruitcake down the disposal chute? That's way too strong. And I thought it was going to be a joke about how bad the fruitcake was. It turns out that as soon as I work out that she's going to keep it, she was like, oh, I'll put it over here. I was like, oh, this is going to come in really handy. There's obviously something in the fruitcake. Yep. And then we get back, and then the people back home say, oh, she's gone off to do this little thing. Well, at least she's got Grace's fruitcake. Well, back in the day, we didn't have fruitcake. We had Uncle's sausage. And I'm like, well, something's in the fruitcake. Like, there's going to be money in it. And she's and all the time, they're like, oh, we're starving on the ship, but let's not eat the 3rd fruitcake. We're going to save that until we're totally starving. Like, people are, like, medically ill because they're starving and stuff. And like, oh, well, let's not eat the fruit. And they keep it all the way through. And every time it comes up, sometimes it comes up three or four times per chapter. In a chapter, they're talking, and they're talking about food and this fruitcake. And then at the end, they're like, literally the last page of the book.
Also, what gets mentioned right at the beginning, it gets mentioned how heavy they are.
Yeah. Oh, these fruitcakes are really, really heavy. Oh, this third one is heavier than the other three, the other two fruitcakes. What can be, and of course, there's fucking diamonds in the fruitcake. And that's not a spoiler because they are never used all the way through. They're waiting for money. They're looking, and they're wanting food, and they're wanting money, and they're wanting food. And then at the very end, they cut into it, and it's like, oh, the knife is sticking
on
in something.
On page 293 of
295.
So in other words, two pages before the end.
Yeah.
They get to it.
They finally get to it. It's not two pages before the end because all that comes up. No, that is the end.
Yes.
That is the end. Yes. That's it. The last words are, tell your aunt it was delicious as she eats the scraps that aren't diamonds and stuff. So anyway, that was one thing that she had right in front of her. All she needed to do was either chuck it in a bin. And it would have been funny if she chucked it into a bin. And when she got home, they were like, why did you throw out the fruitcakes? It was obvious that there was money in them. She's like, oh, sorry, I didn't know. But all the time, Kai is very, very, very stupid about a small number of things.
Yes.
She's generally competent to everything else, but very, very stupid. And one of the things that she's very, 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 very stupid about is the fruitcakes. But it is a stupid plan to hide something in something that people don't like and they're probably going to throw out rather than try and eat.
Yes.
So that's a really stupid thing. But there's this other thing. She's like, oh, this guy who used to be in the special forces and like a spy for the planet, you know, what was his name actually?
McRoberts.
So McRoberts gave her a present, and McRoberts is obviously a spy and is trying to like recruit her into their planet, like spies. You know, obviously, and he gave her a present, and it was a model starship that she had to make. You know, some like. You know, fix it together, paint it kind of thing. And it was like, and she gave it to this, and one bit was a different color than the other bits, but she didn't want to think about that, so she just didn't think about it. And throughout the book, she is willfully not thinking about what he's giving her. And then like, oh, our radio is out, what should we do? And I'm like, the fucking thing
I've seen a thing over
ship. But actually, when she gets to that point, she was like, oh, there's something in my room, what could it be? Over here, I'm sure I've seen something which is like got stripes on it and is this kind of pen-shaped thing like this. Yeah. What could it be in my room? And we're like, spaceship model, that you should just fucking look at the spaceship. And so all the way through, I'm just going, why are you being so stupid about this? And at one point, both the fruitcake and the starship model are mentioned in the same paragraph. And I'm like, boom, we are getting Chekhov's starship model and Chekhov's fruitcake in the same thing. And it's just so frustratingly bad. And if you search for it, fruitcake is mentioned 26 times throughout the book. Actually, more times than that, because sometimes I think it's spelled differently or it's different, you know, it's a different setup.
Yeah.
But Aunt Gracie Lane's fruitcake is just that it's all the way through. We're just being punched in the face. It's like, how can nobody, like, either this should have been mentioned twice at the start. Oh, we've got to get rid of it. And then right at the very end, when people are starving, they should have been like, oh, the fruitcake.
It should have been forgotten. It should have been forgotten.
Yeah. Or it should have been like, and the same thing with the spaceship model. It's like, gave him a spaceship model. And she was like, oh, stupid spaceship model. Like, just put it aside. And then it should have been damaged when her room was raided.
Yeah.
And then when she was, because she doesn't care about it because it's a fucking spaceship model. What she playing with toys for? Like, at that point, she should have scraped it aside and noticed something. Oh, that's a bit weird. That's a bit heavy. But whatever, I don't have time because I've been shot in the face and I've lost all my memories. You know, that's the good time to mention it. It'd be a bit more distracting. But it isn't. All these things are just mentioned all the way through, continuously. And one of them is paid off in one way and the other one is paid off. But it's... Anyway,
we should have mentioned at the beginning that we would do spoilers because
it doesn't matter. We're not spoiling anything. Well, obviously,
but if they're like on my Goodreads, like there are, I think, five people of my friends have read this book and one of them is rating him 5 stars. So,
yeah, but overall,
there must be people who actually enjoy this book.
On my Goodreads, someone gave it 2, gave it 5 stars. Yeah, Michael,
that's my
3 stars.
As well.
But then someone here, Ola, rated it 5 stars. A little bit heroic, a little bit dry. No, this is the 4th time I've read this book, and it is amazing. This book is not amazing. It's so incompetently written.
Yeah.
And also just, I don't want to go into too much about it, but some of the language that is used, for example, there's, well, I made a note of it. Like the info dump at the start. She's like, I always hate it when an author thinks, oh, info dumps are wrong, so I'm not going to do an info dump. I'm not just going to have like the narrator say something. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put quotation marks around it, put it into the voice of somebody else, and tell you all of this information. That is still an info dump, because the definition of an info dump is somebody dumping information which
just isn't, for the sake.
It's not for the sake. It might be needed for the story. To do this in a way which it isn't an info dump is to actually write the information that is needed into the plot. Like, they got into the spaceship and it took them 20 minutes to walk from one end to the other. This is a massive spaceship, somebody says, you know.
Yes.
You can explain the size of something.
And not saying, oh, the ship is 400 meters by...
Glennis Jones is 300 meters overall length, 200 meters beam. And it's really bad because, you see, 300 meters is spelled out as a word. T-H-R-E-E space 100. And then 200 meters is just three characters. 200, 200. And I'm like, first of all, if you're going to have this, you have to have a style guide. If the way that newspapers do it normally, if it's below 10, they write it out. So yes. 9 is written 9. And once you get to 10 and double characters, everything is numbers. And here, 300 meters overall length is written one way, and 200 meters beam, 200 is written in a different way. And it's like right next to each other. What are you doing here? Okay. And then it's 87 years ago, refitted in 08, and it's just like, okay, first, and it just goes on for like a paragraph down the thing. So yes, it's not that info dumping is bad, it's just so unartfully done. There's another bit that I made a thing of here. Slotterkey does use standard calendar units, doesn't it? That's just, Slotterkey is the planet, standard calendar units, yeah. But English, you don't do doesn't it after you say do. You'd say Slotterkey uses standard calendar units, doesn't it? Or Slotterkey doesn't use calendar units, does it? You know, you don't put Slotterkey does use standard units, doesn't it? You can't put a dozen or doesn't in it. And it's just really clunky English. And so many times I'll be reading something and just go, did you not like read this after you like, didn't you go through and like read the lines and stuff like that? Also, we know when someone is annoying because we are told over, there's a guy who comes on board called Christofferson, and he's really annoying, and we're told he's annoying. He acts really annoying. And then people say, they go, if that captain brought them for his own special meal, he can shuffle through. Trouble? He'd like to be, Kai said. It's a good response. So if someone is going to be trouble, it's like, oh, he'd like to be trouble. And stop. And then she goes on. He's used to being in charge, and he thinks being stuck in the cargo hold of a freighter is the worst thing that can happen. And you're like, we know that because we've just seen him being stuck in a cargo hold, and it is the worst thing to happen.
And stop complaining about it.
And then it says, they wouldn't want to stand in there for an hour. I know one who probably would, Kai said, thinking of Christofferson. It's like, yes, we know you're thinking
of that. You missed out now that it talks about standing under the shower for an hour.
An hour and stuff like that. But it's like, we know who you're talking about. All you need to say is like, yes, we know one person who will complain about standing under shower, like, or who will complain about a cold shower. I know one person who will complain about that. You don't have to then say exactly who you're thinking of because we know the one person you're saying. And all these things are brought up time and time again. It's sort of like, and she said this because she was thinking this, this, and this. Oh, it's like being in control of a group of kids at a summer camp, she said. The way that they are screaming and are being annoying and doing all this. Like, yes, we know what kids at summer camp are like. You don't have to say what the simile is and then explain step by step what you mean by that simile, metaphor, whatever it is. Anyway, so it's one of those things.
I want to mention two more things about things that came up, and I was just a bit, So first of all, obviously Elizabeth Moon has something going on for horses.
Yeah.
Because also in the next book.
Yeah, you started reading this. The next book in the series, but the next Elizabeth Moon book that you read.
The other Elizabeth Moon, Hunting Party, as the title already says, it includes horses.
Yeah.
So in this book, there are also horses, not on ships, of course, but on this one planet, they are struggling because they don't have enough agriculture machines. So currently, what they could use animals to do the agriculture work, right? But the problem is that on this whole planet, all the horses are made into polo horses.
Yeah, ponies for the polo playing.
Really? Polo?
Yeah. And they go to a polo match and then don't even watch it. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, and Kilara actually knows it and stuff and actually likes it and stuff. So horses in space is always a bit...
Okay.
And then one other note I took was about a company name. It's called... There's the Amalgamated Transport Trust.
Yeah.
That's a group of shipping companies agree on rates and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Really? Amalgamated Transport Trust?
Yeah.
Like amalgam that you have in your teeth?
Amalgamated. Yeah, but it's an American thing. There's
what is like, it? What is it?
Just, an amalgamation of something just means a group of things stuck together.
All right. So, but it actually is kind of the stuff that you have in your teeth.
Well, the root of the same word, it's the same word. But in America, if when different companies have grouped together, and you know when you get like General Motors, it's because it's general, it's because there's a few different companies come together and they're just General Motors. Or
so it's like
American Airlines. It's like, yeah, American used to be these different things and they got together and they just picked a bigger name. And so the amalgamated this is just what companies get together and they can call themselves. So don't worry too much about that. That's just
weird
Americanism.
But that was something that came up and I thought, what's this? What does this word here now mean?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, let me just go through the last of my notes. Kai had nothing to do. Skip the chapter that she had nothing to do. Glenys Jones, which is the name of the ship, set off on course with no fuss and no surprises. Skip that part of the book. Don't give me the parts of the book where nothing is happening. Skip those parts. Then civilian life seemed to be long periods of boredom interrupted by moments of dismal reflection. And then I was like, yeah, this book seems to be like long periods of boredom interrupted by moments of dismal reflection. That's what it is. You know, all the times it was like this book was... and she uses the word, she couldn't think of an epithet about that. And I was like, I don't think she's using the word epithet quite correctly. And then I looked up.
What does that mean?
Exactly. The way that they're saying is she couldn't think of a swear word. And this is always a thing because in these military science fiction books, nobody has sex, nobody swears.
Right.
People only die regretfully except when they're the enemy and then whatever, you know, and stuff like that. Everyone is, so an epithet is like something you would call somebody, but at that point it wasn't an epithet for anything. She just couldn't think of one, and I was like, yeah, because that's not what an epithet is. But maybe it's amalgamated. I don't know the other meaning of that. So far, I've been reacting to things. I suppose you should. And I was like, yeah, you know what? So far, you have been reacting to things. She makes one decision, which everyone expected her to make anyway, and were making bets on when she would make it.
Yes.
Then she was just generally competent for the rest of the book.
Yes.
And then I went back, and at the end of the book, I made a note here. He coughed blood and collapsed, gargling. At 66% of the way through the book is the last point in the book where any plot happens, where anybody makes any decisions to move the plot forward in any way.
Okay.
That's it. The rest of the book, from then on, is just stuff playing out.
It's just outcome.
And then, then that is finished 75% of the way through the book. Literally the last 25% of the book is her, just them clearing up, her getting back to the place, everyone saying, oh, you're still good. Well, you're good, aren't you? Yes, you're good, and you should be good, and you should earn more money this way. Oh, and you did some right things, so then you will get paid in this way.
And everyone gives her always, gives her, in those coming situations, everyone gives her the things on hand, how she needs to react now.
Yeah. Everyone tells her what to do and helps her out, and she just gets all the benefits and gets all the prizes, and she gets the prizes. And it's, again, that's another thing that always annoys me at the end of the books. It's like, oh, you helped out here, so you're going to be prime minister, and you're going to be a prince, and you're going to get this woman, and you're going to get... And this is kind of what happens at the end. And at the end of the book, everyone works out. Her father was proud of her. The people who were annoying, turns out they were wrong. All the people who were not annoying, turns out they were the good guys and nice. The people who took over the ship, turns out... The mercenaries, they're heroes. The monopolist communication people, they're good as well. Who was bad in any of this? There was no bad people. The people who were bad, well, they got shot.
Spoiler.
So, well, whatever.
The pirates are the bad people.
It's not a spoiler when they say, oh, I hope nothing happens now that these people are on the ship. And just in case anything happens, let me have a whole chapter where I don't do anything except practice with these crossbows.
Yes.
And... then the next chapter, it's like, oh, and now these crossbows are going to come in handy right now at this moment after I spent the whole last chapter practicing with the crossbows. It's not a spoiler. It's not a spoiler when the book is telling you all the time what's going to happen. And then when it finishes, they say what happened another three times. Like, she then says what happened. Oh, you think I'm not a hero. Well, my ship was invaded. Let me tell you about how my ship was invaded. You don't think I'm a hero, but my friend died. And let me tell you what I had to do. But it's just fucking hell. Anyway, I've done enough. What is this book about? This book is about turning your brain off.
Yes, that's what I said.
I know. Normally I'd say, oh, the theme of this book is women, you know what, sometimes can be generally competent. Isn't that amazing?
No, but happen to be just doing stuff right.
Yeah, she follows instructions. She does what's expected of her. She is generally competent at it. And she comes out a hero and everyone's really surprised and rewards her.
Yeah.
But she's already the daughter of the... She's already going to have an amazing life
anyway.
She already
starts quite high up in possibilities.
The book is called Trading in Danger. There is a lot of trading before any danger comes up in this book as well. I was like, you know, almost... You know, like 55%. And I was like, finally, some fucking danger in the book called Trading in Danger. It's a book about, just be born as the daughter of one of the most richest men and the most influential people in the transport business, and then get given a ship and money to buy the ship from your own father. It's like, well, there's no challenge or anything. It's just
it feels a bit like slightly more difficult 16th birthday present or 18th birthday present to your daughter when you're rich. Like, she gets a car, but to get the car, she has to do things that she's expected to do, but
with money that you're giving her to it's like, oh, what you should do, daughter, is be responsible and buy a car for yourself for your 16th birthday. And look, I'm going to give you all the money that you need to do it. And in case you don't have all the money, your auntie is going to give you literally a cake full of diamonds. A cake full of diamonds.
Good, doesn't it?
It sounds like
a good life. I want
that life. And this is aspirational fiction?
But maybe this is written for people to think, ah, this would be cool. I could be that person doing this and that. Maybe.
Right, we've gone on long enough. We thought this was going to be a shorter episode. And we
but of course, if there's a book that Luke can rant about, he needs to rant about it.
You talked as much as me. Generally,
no.
Not quite as much. You talked quite a bit. There, at the end, I did go into some rants, but you also had some good rants.
You did actually.
Okay, that's
that.
It. The next book that I'm going to be reviewing, I've already read it, and I'm going to review it probably over the next few days. But it is New Year's Eve tonight, so I'm not going to do it today. We're going to go out for an early New Year's Eve dinner. And then this is the first New Year's Eve we actually just had in Berlin, just the two of us hanging out.
Yes.
We normally do juggling festivals and meet up with jugglers. Oh, I've been working 1 year. This is our fifth New Year?
Fifth New Year's together.
Wow, it's been weird, isn't it? People have been listening to the... I know some people have been listening to the podcast since year one. So, yeah, as of tomorrow, as of January 1st, this is going to be year, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. We're going into year 8 of the science fiction book. Year 9 of the science
Pretty
fiction
cool.
book review podcast. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
So we're just completing year 8 now.
So what's the next book then?
Nine Princes in Amber by Roger Zelazny. I've completed that as well. And after that, I'm probably going to actually finally get around to talking about a book called The Dying Earth by Jack Vance. So we're going back through some classic science fiction there.
Also, we might do a joint podcast with the SFF Audio with Jesse about The First Men in the Moon.
Yes, and also there's another book that we actually started this time last year when we were on a New Year's trip.
Oh, yes.
Which is Alistair Reynolds, his Redemption Arc. Is it Redemption?
Yeah,
it's Redemption Arc. But we've not driven very much. And when we do, we've been listening to podcasts and other things as well. So we got halfway through this book, but then kind of stopped listening to it in the summer after our summer trip. So we've not really listened to it much. So what we're going to do is we're just going to each individually download the audiobook and finish it off. And we'll get around to that one. But again, it's always weird, one of these things that every time I read one of these military science fiction books, I'm always just like, why don't these people read Alistair Reynolds books? Like every single thing
that
he's doing
that
in these books, Alistair Reynolds just literally... Every single thing. The characters are better, the stories are better, the setup is better, the spaceships are better, the battles are better.
And the twists.
The twists are better. There's actually a story. It's well written. Yeah. Like, just everything about it is better. And I'm just like, why do people settle for, like, military... Oh, we didn't do a rating of it. You rated it 3 stars on the first time when you looked
at
it.
Yeah, but then I was thinking a bit more about it. And it's
you
actually...
only rated it 3 stars because you got through it quickly.
Yes, but now I actually took a star away because I actually was thinking about, oh, it's so repetitive. It has so many things that are just not good about this book. But in the two... So I gave it 2 stars for... serving my movie book
turn your brain off,
and I could just turn my brain off, and it was easy to read. Really, it was easy.
Like, okay, just well, that's good. I'm also going to give it 2 stars. No, I'm going to give it 1.5 stars. So it's going to come out just below 2 stars. 1.75 stars between us, because it is just, it was so pathetic. However, it was a fast read. I think if it had been longer, I would have liked it less.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because I managed to read it in 3 days.
Yeah,
yeah, but and also I didn't pay for it. You paid for it.
Yeah,
and
I
could just share your Kindle purchase and things like that. So, oh, that's why you bought it on Kindle, because you'd just been reading the Ancillary Justice,
yes,
which was on Kindle,
yes.
And so I see that's why you came up with that store instead of you normally on iBooks and things. Anyway, yeah. So that'll do for now. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Bode. You can follow Juliana Kunzendorf on Twitter. If you search for Juliana Kunzendorf or type in JUKU Berlin, that's her Twitter handle. You can email me luke@juggler.net. I do reply to everything, and also become our friends on Goodreads, and we can see what you think of books like
this.
Yeah,
and you can suggest,
seriously, 5 stars.
Recommend books.
Like, just read literally any other science fiction book by any author which doesn't have a picture of a female in a captain's uniform standing in front of a control panel with a planet behind. Any book which isn't that will be better than this.
Now, I wouldn't say any book, but lots of books.
Most books,
yes,
will be better than that.
And you can see on Goodreads how many books we read and rated a lot higher. So these are then the good books.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say good books, just books
that we enjoy.
But like, how does somebody read this and think it's good?
Let's just finish this. Okay. We talked enough about it.
Yes, we have. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.